surely have been a shock if anybody else was abducted. But with her, it's particularly difficult because, you know, you work with so many people, and some of them you don't have a great contact. You know, you work with them, but you don't really connect too much. But Amit is one that connects with everybody, so it's really very felt, heartfelt in the firm and everywhere. I get phone calls, many people who know her because she worked in the firm, and I get phone calls every day from people saying, "Oh, I just heard, I'm in shock," and so on.
Clause 8 is part of IP Watchdog and sponsored by Herity, the go-to firm for the Patent 300 for patent preparation and prosecution. And now here's your host, Eli Mazur.
On the last episode of Clause 8, I mentioned the horrific attacks and aftermath of October 7th in Israel. It's impossible to really put the horror and scale of that into words. One of the hostages still being held by Hamas is a newborn baby. Another is a 3-year-old girl. She's an orphan because her parents were murdered by Hamas when she was taken hostage. Gabriella and Mia Leinberg are also being held hostage. They're the wife and daughter of Israeli patent examiner Moshe Leinberg. After recording the previous episode, I learned that another one of the 240 hostages being held by Hamas is Amit Susana. She's an IP attorney at the law firm of Lozado and Lozado. Kfir Lozado, the firm's senior partner, has generously agreed to join Clause 8 during this difficult time to tell the story of that horrific day in Amit. Kfir, thank you so much for joining Clause 8.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'm obviously very sorry about the horror of a day and everything that Israel is going through. And I wish we were meeting under completely different circumstances. I know there's a lot we could talk about during happier times. But I guess before we get to the day, can you just tell us a little bit about your law firm and about how did you end up in Israel?
Oh, that's that's an interesting story. Our firm was established in Italy by my great-grandfather. So we had just celebrated 154 years of work in IP, with me being the fourth generation, and we have the fifth generation working in the firm already. My father always was a Zionist. Well, always, probably not. He was, when he was much younger, the racial laws in Italy came about with the fascism and Mussolini. And he managed to move to the U.S., naturalize as a U.S. citizen, and enlist in the army. Fought in the Philippines during World War II. And then he decided to come to Israel, or Palestine at the time. He just made a little detour to go and see what happened with the family in Italy. And there he met my mother. So the little detour took him more than 25 years. But he was always about to come to Israel. So eventually, you know, when things were ripe, everybody moved to Israel.
And he reestablished the firm, I guess, that your great-grandfather started when he came to Italy?
Well, for a few years, he worked. He continued to work in Italy and in Israel in parallel. But then everything moved to Israel.
How big is your firm?
Just a little short of 100 people.
Now I want to talk about the October 7th attacks, kind of give a sense to the listeners about what that day was like for you. What were you doing that weekend? I guess, what were your plans for October 7th?
Well, incredibly, I was woken up by my daughter calling me on the phone. I was in Casablanca, Morocco.
Oh, wow.
At the moment. Yeah. And I was, on the same day, I was due to fly back to Israel. But unfortunately, my flight was supposed to go through Istanbul. And I was told, no, don't you dare flying to Istanbul because you'll get stuck there because flights will not be flying to Israel from there. So I had to find a flight to Italy and then from there I found a flight to Israel. But it was pretty horrible because my daughter called me and said, oh, you know, we are stuck here. We are waiting. We don't know what's going on. We hear all these stories. We live in Homer, which is a little farther away from the place where the actual attack was. But it's in the south, and it's a pretty close when you think of it.
What did she tell you when she first called you?
Well, she has two little kids, so she was very frightened. They, you know that houses in Israel have their own shelter.
Safe room.
Well, it's more than a safe room. It's really a shelter that is built to withstand missiles and things. So she was in there, and she stayed there for quite some time until it was safe to come out. But, you know, being far away, it's probably the worst thing that you can have in a situation like that. Being far away and not knowing what happens.
When did you start to understand, I guess, the extent and the horror, I guess, what was happening on that day?
We got first impression, you know, the notion of what was going on was going around pretty quickly. But you didn't get the understanding of the extent of the thing. You knew there were people were being killed. You knew there were terror attacks. But you know, the thought, for instance, of people dancing, and about 300 or 400 people being killed at a rave. That's something that kind of defeats imagination until you. It takes a little while, you know, to internalize the thought of that.
You eventually made it back to Israel, and you mentioned you have 100 employees. I guess what did you do next? I guess when you got back to Israel, in terms of trying to put your hands around to what was going on with everyone. Yeah,
we. I kept pretty busy because many of my employees lived in the affected areas. So they had to leave.
Yeah.
Some of them barely escaped with their lives. Others were a little more fortunate and got away in time. But they were, and they still are, some of them scattered all over Israel because they cannot go back to where they live. So I had to do a lot of thinking how we were going to function. Luckily, I would say the corona was a big help to us because we were used to working from afar. So remote working is not an issue for us, and all our employees have the equipment and we have all the security in place so people can work from afar. But there was a bit of a shock, as you can imagine, for quite some time, and it took people a while to get back to some kind of normality. And some of them still are, you know, you have a family of 5 or 6 living in a small hotel room because they've been evacuated. That's not an easy way to work.
You mentioned that some of your employees barely escaped alive. Any stories from that that's kind of stood out to you from that beginning? I know some of your employees as well, they did have family members who were ended up being murdered on that day.
Well, one of my former partners, who is now retired, his grandson was murdered at that rave. Oh my God. So we, you know, we are kind of the firm now is happily functioning. Pretty much, I wouldn't say normally, but I'd say 90% of normal. But we've always been a big family because it's a family business.
Yeah.
So our employees are also part of the families, and we have become a big support group for the ones who are handling this probably not as well as others. Some are handling it pretty well, but others need more support, moral support, I would say.
And how did you first learn that Amit might be one of the victims? Do you remember that?
Yes, we actually, she was missing for the first 20 days. We didn't know what happened to her. And for a time, we worried that she had been killed, because I don't know if you're aware, but one of the horrors that these people did, I don't know how to call them, many of the bodies were burned beyond recognition. So even yesterday, one of the victims was identified more than a month after that. So some of them there was very little left to identify. So we thought that it was very likely that she had been killed. And 20 days later, the family got information from government agencies that in fact she had been kidnapped.
You know, from those early days, I remember there was a father who he said he broke out in tears of relief when he learned that his daughter was murdered instead of being kidnapped. Obviously, I can't imagine learning either news, but I mean, what was it like for you and her family waiting for that news and trying to, I guess, deal with that?
Yeah, well, you know, some of us has to be strong, so we can strengthen others. Obviously, we think about her all the time, and we do many things. We are in touch with the family every day. We've been in touch with bar associations all over the world, obviously with the Israeli Bar Association, and they're doing a lot of work. Just today, I received a notice that the French Bar Association they have some kind of, I forgot what the occasion is, but they have a big dinner, and they will be putting empty chairs at each table for the people who are being held in Gaza, and one for Amit. We are, you know, making sure that her story and her picture is going around as much as possible. Also, first of all, because it may help at some point. You never know what happens, and being a high profile victim is always something that may. I mean, it may cut both ways, but in a situation like this, there may make a difference. I don't know, but mostly it's a great help to the family. They know that she's not abandoned. They know that people do things. And the worst thing that happens in a situation like this is that you are powerless to do anything. So if you find things to do, that's a lot. And it's a lot for the family, of course.
Can you share what is Amit like, and what was it like for everyone who worked with her?
Amit is the nicest person, really. She's, besides being a very good lawyer and doing a wonderful job, and many of us, you know, are used to rely on her all the time, but she's a great person. And I mean, it would probably have been, not probably, surely have been a shock if anybody else was abducted. But with her, it's particularly difficult because, you know, you work with so many people, and some of them, you don't have a great contact. You know, you work with them, but you don't really connect too much. But Amit is one that connects with everybody. So it's really very heartfelt in the firm and everywhere. I get phone calls. Many people who know her because she worked in the firm, and I get phone calls every day from people saying, "Oh, I just heard. I'm in shock," and so on. She. I don't want to say she left an impression, because she hasn't left, but she impresses people. And people remember her, and So it's more difficult, you know, imagining, because we know her so well, it's more difficult imagining what she's going through.
You know, you mentioned some of the things that you're doing and you're trying to some way to support her family and bring her home. It's been, I guess on the day of recording, I think the 15th, I think it's been 40 days since Amit has been held hostage. Anybody listening to this, I guess, what else do you think could be done to help bring Amit and other hostages home?
Well, we need to trust that, you know, the government and the army are doing everything possible. And I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
There are many, many areas in which I'm critical of the government, and I think they are not doing enough during normal times.
Yeah.
But in this particular issue, I have absolutely no doubt that they're doing everything that is humanly possible. So I think we need to support them in that and let them do their job. I understand that families, again, they want to be proactive. They want to feel that they're doing something. They want to make sure that they are not leaving any stone unturned. So they assemble and they manifest and they do things. Sometimes that is actually a negative thing because it gives the terrorists more leverage and they make them feel that they can apply more pressure and so on. I think being quiet and not talking too much about the actual work being done to release the hostages is the best thing we can do.
And, you know, you mentioned, obviously, the news that you got about the French Bar Association doing that. What do you think, overall, has the reaction in the West been like to what's just happened after that day and now that these hostages are still being held, I guess? Any thoughts about that?
It's, well, first of all, it's not something that is unexpected, the way that the world has reacted. Because the world is essentially divided and decent people and not decent people. Among those who might be decent people, you have the stupid people. And a good example is what's going on in the universities in the U.S. You look at these people, they have absolutely no clue what they're talking about, what they're manifesting about. But I don't really care about them. I saw the yesterday 290,000 people in Washington, D.C. That's something. And when you see that, I think it's a good thing, essentially, that the world is waking up, because people are starting to realize that our war is the West war. It's us, and we are the last, you know. The last bastion before if they were able, they will not be able to, but if they were able to win and destroy us, you will be next in line. The U.S. will be next in line. Well, the U.S. is already a little bit in line because of what's going on there. And Europe, of course, they're starting to wake up and understand a little bit of what we are seeing, and it's in there already, and maybe, just maybe, people will really wake up and do something about it.
You mentioned, you know, you trust the Israeli government is doing everything possible to bring Amit home. Israel, I guess, is the front line of a fight, good versus evil. It's Israel's the one confronting it now. I guess, what can America do? Let Israel do what it needs to do.
I think that secretly, and maybe in some cases not so much secretly, the Western countries are applauding and hoping that we will finish the job. Of course, everybody has to be humane and say, okay, be sure that they limit casualties and humanitarian aids and whatever. But I believe that in reality, the people understand what's going on and they know that we must finish the job. Otherwise, things may take a bad turn in their homes.
Is there anything else that you want everyone to know about Amit, that horrific day and what Israel has gone or going through? Anything else?
Well, I think it's obvious, but sometimes you need to point it out. Obviously, what's happening to Amit herself is horrific. But what's happening to her family is no less horrific. And the families who are not hostages are in fact also hostages. And what they're going through is maybe even worse mentally, not physically and not practically. And people tend to forget that the families are victims. And living for so long without knowing what's going to happen and how their sons or daughters are, how they are alive, they are not alive, is probably the worst thing that may happen to anybody. So we need to look at the families and treat them as victims. Beyond that, Israel has gone through a lot of hardship over the years, and we always pulled through, and we will pull through this time too, obviously. The price is high, but the good news is we don't have a choice. It's different when you have a war that is you have a choice whether to go to war or not to go to war. We don't have a choice. It's live or die, essentially, and we are not planning on dying. So, but we have to go on and win this war.
Thank you, Kfir. Thank you for joining Clause 8, for sharing that. I will keep praying for Amit, all the hostages, and as you rightly pointed out, other families that are victims of this as well and still going through this horror, and for Israel to win this as quickly as Israel can. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Clause 8, the voice of IP. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with others and leave a 5-star rating in your favorite podcatcher. And we also like to thank Harity & Harity LLP for their generous support. For more information, visit voiceofip.com. And don't forget to check out our full archive of past episodes. Clause 8 is a Brouhaha audio production. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.